each and every human that you're going to encounter, each and every woman who's going to bring their story, has a unique story. And like I said earlier, I believe leaders aren't paid to have all the answers, but you are paid to listen and transact between you in an adult way. And the message that I always provide to organisations is, if I disclose my menopause to you and you're my line manager, what I hope is that we've got a safe enough relationship where I can share and be myself and share without judgment.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, everybody. This is Ben Morton, and welcome to episode 71 of the podcast. This week, we have a very different episode talking about a very different topic. And when my brilliant assistant Amanda suggested this week's guest, I didn't immediately see how her area of expertise, and indeed her passion, would really fit with this show. But that was more due to my ignorance on the topic and her area of expertise more than anything else. The more I thought about it, and having recorded this episode, I realised there is a huge link between what she's talking about and our job as leaders. So, ladies and gentlemen, without any further delay, let me introduce this week's guest, who is Sharon MacArthur. Sharon is the owner of Miss Menopause, which was formed 4 years ago in response to the lack of information about menopause in the workplace. Sharon works face-to-face and online around the country with organisations both large and small. She has appeared on BBC Breakfast, ITN News and Victoria Derbyshire and is a regular on BBC Radio Newcastle talking about the subject of menopause. Sharon is on a mission to educate everyone about this life event and believes that ignorance can no longer be an excuse. Prior to founding Miss Menopause, Sharon worked as an executive coach to senior leaders, and before that she held senior positions herself, all of which means she is very well placed to be talking to leadership teams about menopause, how it affects productivity, and the number of women in C-suite positions. But for now, let's get back to this episode and my conversation with Sharon MacArthur. As you listen, all I would say is please keep an open mind, because if you do, I think you'll get a whole lot more from this episode and see why menopause is a subject that leaders really should have at least some awareness of. Sharon, a very warm welcome to the podcast. It's great to have you with us today. And I must say, actually, before we get started, I feel slightly apprehensive about this episode. And I know as the podcast host, I shouldn't, because I've just got to ask the questions.
Yeah.
But we're going to talk about a topic that I have got next to zero knowledge on, which is partly why I'm so keen to have you on the show and why I think it's such an important topic and conversation for leaders, as I alluded to in the introduction. So that being the case, can I just ask you to start off by sharing a little bit of your story, I guess, that led you to doing the work that you now do and what that work is?
Well, I am a menopause educator, is how I describe myself these days. And I'm as surprised as anybody to find this is what I'm doing, because if you'd said to me 4 years ago, Ben, I was going to get passionately involved with the menopause, I would have said, don't be ridiculous. That has nothing to do with me and my life. But because of my own lived experience, so I can hardly believe it, but this year I will be 54 years of age. I'm devastated. That means in 6 years, I could be 60. I don't even know how that's happened. But my life was going along very well. I was running my leadership coaching business, and I started to get some really strange and weird things happen to me, mentally and physically. And somebody dared to say to me, Sharon, do you not think this could be menopause? Well, at the age of 47, 48, I thought I was way too young for whatever that stuff was. Whatever that stuff was, yes, intellectually I'd heard of menopause, and I knew it was, you know, end of your fertility, but I didn't believe for 1 minute that that would happen to me. And probably the main reason being that I knew at the age of 14, I didn't care to be a mother. So my body, my choice. I didn't think I was cut out for motherhood. So I knew growing up, you know, I wouldn't suffer from postnatal depression, postpartum psychosis, and I never changed my mind from the age of 14. So I probably thought in my utter ignorance, and it was utter ignorance, that because I hadn't shaken up my hormones, that menopause thing just wasn't going to happen to me. And I was totally, totally unprepared for what was happening to me. And didn't believe for 1 minute that it could be menopause. So I was disgusted, in fact, when somebody dared to say, Sharon, do you not think it could be menopause? Because in my utter ignorance, I believed that menopause only happened to women who were incredibly old, much older than me. And so I really never, ever imagined. And then it started me to do lots of research. And then I started to get really angry. Why did I not know about this? So, you know, I'd been a senior leader in a FTSE 100 company. I'd been accountable for millions of pounds worth of revenue. How did I not know about this life event, which in effect will impact 100% of reproducing females? And I thought I was really smart. I thought I was streetwise. And I thought I knew a lot of things about a lot of things. So how did I not know about this? Then when I asked around, nobody seemed to know about this. So I said at the time, because my business has been going over 4 years ago now, I said either at the time, and my tongue is firmly in my cheek when I say this, I'm either a genius or I'm completely and utterly crazy. So today I'm choosing to believe that I'm a genius. And I'm delighted to say that menopause has been, you know, much more readily talked about, but it's been a long time coming and we have a long way to go, really, in my opinion. And the point being is that most women don't even know about the menopause. So, and I think there's maybe an idea that, you know, born female, you know about childbirth, you know about, you know, menopause, you know about all the things that are going to occur. And we don't, we haven't been told a thing. So I guess if I was to describe Miss Menopause, I like to say I'm providing the corporate girl chat, but for everybody.
The question that springs to mind straight away based on that is why go into business and corporates talking about it as opposed to running a whole load of what you and I probably describe as open courses or online courses or go into, I don't know, meeting room somewhere and just get a load of people from your local town to come and listen to you.
Well, because really I saw the impact it was having on me and my work and life. And I just think my mission is to educate everybody. Now, if you go down the one-to-one route, it's going to take an awful long time to drum up that support. But I could genuinely say like the King's New Clothes story, where I felt like the little boy who was going, you've got no clothes on. I felt like I could see that this was a problem. And this is obviously pre-pandemic. So there was starting to be more noise around, you know, mental health and well-being, and starting that you would see, you know, this started to come much more to the forefront of organisational thinking. And I was thinking, well, hang on a minute, you know, mental health, well-being, that's a, you know, huge topic and quite rightly so it should be talked about. But the more I was learning about menopause through, you know, research and reading, but the more I was learning about it through my own lived experience, I could really see how at one point I thought I was going to have to stop my original business because I just couldn't function. And I thought, well, if this is happening to me in a micro way, if you scale that up and learning that it's 100% of reproducing females, what impact is that going to have on those individuals, on their mental health, on their well-being, and then ultimately from a business point of view? And again, you know, AD&I wasn't really so much being talked about even 4 years ago now, let's be honest. But again, it cuts across all of that. So over time, if we choose to do nothing about this subject, i.e. we don't learn about it, over time, organisations will become less diverse, not more diverse. And it's estimated that there's some ridiculous statistic that says the fastest growing demographic in business is women who are over the age of 50. And we talk about, you know, wanting more women in C-suite positions. We talk about more diversity. We're talking about wanting women to take on more accountability, etc. And I truly believe, and I wrote an article nearly 4 years ago now to say, I truly believe that I think one of the big factors of women dipping out of business as they're getting into their 40s onwards probably had a big reason to do with menopause. And the point is because nobody's told us. So we've never had, I say I describe myself as providing the corporate girl chat, we've never had the girl chat about menopause. So it hasn't sat in the school curriculum. It was meant to go in there last year, but obviously pandemic-wise, who knows where it is and the quality of where it is. But I often say to my clients, my service shouldn't really exist. What I do shouldn't really exist because we should be taught from a very young age about all these major life events that are going to occur to humans and their bodies. And we should just, you know, no one should lift an eyebrow, really, when we talk about it. But, you know, in your very introduction, you were like a bit, oh, I don't know how this will go. We should, none of us should feel like this. But currently, right now, we're all feeling a bit, oh, what's all this about? And it's just, it's outrageous, really, that we've got this point in the 21st century and we've got women whispering in corners, you know, I'm going through the menopause, or I think I am. And it really is heartbreaking, because the saddest things that women say to me on a daily basis are this: I thought I had early onset Alzheimer's. That is really, really common. And I felt so alone. So you've got women and organisations believing they are the only ones that these things are happening to. And what I say is, did you not know you're in the least exclusive club on the planet? I've christened it the 100% club. And women genuinely, when I say things like that to them, the relief of, I never thought of it like that. And they feel often from a workplace point of view, you know, there's often women will say things, I feel like I have to compete with men. I have to be better than that. Women are often still the main carers still in the 21st century. So they're maybe having to hold down full-time jobs, look after younger children, because we know women are having children later in life, maybe looking to progress their career at the same time. And then this thing, this life event called menopause, comes along and makes women think they've got early onset Alzheimer's. So quite quickly, women are putting two and two together and coming up with 46 and almost telling themselves a story. And who hasn't heard somebody around, you know, in their peer group or around and about to say, especially women, I've lost my confidence. I just don't feel confident anymore. And when you dig under the surface, you often find it's these weird and wacky and wonderful things that can start to happen to your mind and your body through the power of your shifting and declining hormones, because that's really where it all begins.
So Sharon, you've alluded to this lots and touched on bits of this. So you've talked about the impact it had on your performance and your ability to work and run your business. If you don't mind sharing, like, what was some of that impact? So I know for you, it was nearly extreme. Your example of kind of driving your car down the motorway, I think. Because I think this would be a interesting thing for you to share, not least for the women out there listening who might be starting to go through the menopause. And then for leaders and managers, irrespective of their sex, they'll be kind of managing people going through it. And often we don't know, do we, what's going on in people's lives and how that is affecting their ability to do their job. So, like, what was the impact?
The first thing I'll say about menopause is each and every person will have a menopause like themselves. And that's what makes it incredibly difficult. So when I tell my story, it is my story. It's not the story.
Got you.
And that's what makes it really, really unique. So you might know people who will describe similar things, but ultimately it will all be unique to that individual. And that's what makes it really, really difficult. And I always say, from a leadership point of view, those leaders who are listening, I don't believe leaders are paid to have all the answers, but my belief is I believe leaders are certainly paid to listen. So my menopause story began with my first symptom was night terrors. So I'd wake up always 4 o'clock in the morning feeling like the world was going to end, just this horrendous feeling. I'd never had, you know, any what I'd describe as, you might describe as, mental health issues before. And I knew there was nothing going on untoward in the workplace, because my boss was lovely, because it was me. and there was nothing going on in my home life that I could reconcile. Why on earth would I be feeling like that? So I had several episodes over several months, and then they kind of abated and I didn't have them anymore. So that was good. I didn't really think too much of it. And the difficulty that you have to understand here is, before I knew any of this stuff, I thought menopause was like a linear process. I thought you would go to bed one evening, you would wake up one day, the next day, and live happily ever after, never having a period ever again. That is what I believed. How utterly foolish and incorrect was I, because it's not like that at all. Because all of the while, and this again is what makes it really disconcerting, all of the while I was having these initial symptoms, I was still having regular periods. So how on earth are you supposed to join the dots up to know that equals that equals that? It's just really, really difficult. So the next symptom that I started to display was you'd call it night sweats, I suppose. That's the type. It's a gorgeous title that's given, night sweats. But again, what was different for me is I am not, I'm going to use this term, a sweaty girl. Now, what I mean by that is whenever I've gone to the gym with my friends, we've had conversations where they'll say things like, Sharon, you're not even trying. It's because I just don't perspire. So when it comes to the subject of menopause, I'm incredibly fortunate that that's the case, because there are some women out there who are going to get so hot through the day, through the night, they are having to either carry, you know, spare items of clothing around, or they're going to have to strip their beds through the night because they're perspiring so much. So fortunately, that wasn't happening to me. So again, why would I join the dots and think that was what that was? So the first strange thing was I was waking up in the middle of the night, which apparently my other half tells me I can sleep through a hurricane. So I was waking up and I was really hot again. Pretty unusual. I'm normally always freezing cold.
And I guess that starts to have an impact on performance, right? Because you're not getting as much sleep as you need, so you're operating tired, underperforming because of that.
Yeah, so wasn't sleeping very well at all. But again, just to add, this is why my mission is everyone needs to understand this, because it was impacting my other half. So he wasn't sleeping because I was awake. I was shuffling around. I was up and down, you know. So, and again, so it started to genuinely affect our relationship as well as, you know, being sleep deprived, the pair of us. You know, he would be grumpy because he was tired. He would blame me. Why are you keeping me awake? I'll be like, well, I didn't ask for this. So it really did start to impact me. And I would say some of the most profound feedback that I've had from organisations has been the men who've come along to my sessions, where I've had men contact me after the event to say, do you know what, Sharon, learning about this stuff is probably going to help to save my marriage. That is the importance of learning about this sort of stuff. So like I say, I didn't ever think for one minute that those things were connected to menopause, because the only things that I'd ever heard growing up were these. So I'd intellectually heard of the word menopause and I knew it was end of fertility. I knew that. And I'd heard about hot flushes because that's really all I'd ever heard about, which sounds like...
That's one symptom everyone's heard, right? I remember my mum going, oh, hot flush must be having the menopause, going through the menopause.
And honestly, Ben, it sounds like nothing, but nobody tells you you can't escape your own body, so because it's internal. So it doesn't matter what you do until it's abating, you can't stop it. And then the only other thing I heard about used to be my grandmother, who often used to refer it to all of her friends in a whispered tone, by the way, which would always whisper. It'll be, you know, Mary's going through the change. And I think, oh my goodness, what are all my grandma's friends changing into? So I used to be quite terrified I might meet them on a dark night because nobody ever told me.
Maybe that was what caused the night terrors.
Well, possibly, possibly, absolutely. So nobody was ever talking about this stuff. So, but the most untenable symptom for me in the end was my inability to remain asleep. So I could get to sleep, no problem. That wasn't a problem. But it was 2 o'clock. It was always 2 o'clock. Bing, eyes on springs. And I literally felt like I couldn't shut my eyes all through the night. And then some kind soul bought me one of these trackers. And then that was even more pressure because it used to say, you have only had two hours sleep. And so in the end, you've alluded to it already. I must say the menopause could have killed me because I fell asleep momentarily at the wheel of my car when I was driving at speed, because I was so exhausted. I was like a zombie. I could hardly keep my eyes open. So from a work perspective, I could only trust myself to drive for a maximum of 30 minutes before I'd have to pull over and have some kind of power nap. And I just thought, you know what? I can't live my life this way. How on earth am I supposed to function? You know, and it got so bad, I really did seriously think that I wasn't going to be able to work anymore. And so I thought, well, I can't accept this. So I started to look at what were the options to manage my symptoms. And the first thing I did was I went to Dr. Google. Now, who doesn't love a bit of Dr. Google? Now, Dr. Google 5 years ago said, Sharon, what you need are some sage leaf tablets. I was like, right, okay, I'm going to get these tablets. And the only thing I can tell you is after 2 weeks of taking them as prescribed, all I felt was sick. Ben, because the only thing I could taste was sage and onion stuffing. It was horrible. It was vile. Now, the thing is, and this is what makes it really difficult, just because something works for me, it may never work for you and vice versa. So there are many, many women out there who you might meet and go, they will say, oh my goodness, sage leaf tablets were the thing that really helped me the most. So then I was, because I wasn't sleeping, I was reading up loads and loads of information. It said magnesium was great. Now, magnesium is a great thing because you can eat it, you can wear it, I spray it all over, and you can bath in it if you want. So literally, I was doing all three. I was like, magnesium's the thing for me. And again, it worked a little bit. I've slept a little bit better, but nowhere near what I needed. So then I went off to see my GP, who prescribed me antidepressants, which I now know, at the time I didn't appreciate this, but I now know were the wrong thing to be offered. And sadly, that offer of antidepressants is all way too common for individuals who go to the GP.
Was that because the doctor didn't diagnose menopause, or they did, but for antidepressants was what you needed?
The latter. Oh, wow. So a lot of GPs seem to reach for antidepressants, even though the guidelines they're meant to use would say HRT should be the thing that is should be firstly explored with individuals who are menopausal. And it's estimated there's some ridiculous statistic out there that said something like maximum of between 8-9% of women in the UK who could take HRT do take HRT because most of them are terrified through things their GPs have told them or things they've read or heard.
Right.
So I'm on a mission to dispel not just myths about HRT. There's tons of ways you can manage your menopause, but doing nothing shouldn't be one of them. That's my main message. So eventually, after trial and error, it took me over 18 months of trial and error to get to this point. I eventually got to HRT in the end, because like many women, I was like, I don't want to try that. That's terrible, that stuff. And the brilliant, brilliant thing for me, remember, this is my story, not the story, was within 2 weeks, all of my symptoms disappeared.
Wow.
And the other symptoms I'll tell you about. So, for example, I had what I can only describe as PMT times a million. And let me describe what I share what I mean by that. It means that I could be watching like adverts on the TV for things like adverts for cat food and then burst into tears. Whoa, that's so sad. And think, Sharon, that's outrageous. Why on earth are you behaving like that? Then within 60 seconds, I could have easily murdered the nearest human. It was that extreme. So the point being is just imagine if that's you in the workplace.
It's just what I was going to ask.
Yeah. Just imagine. And this is the thing that people need to understand. Sometimes you can't predict, not from week to week or month and by month, how you might feel. Sometimes it's hour by hour and minute by minute. You don't know what your mind and body might do next. It feels like sometimes it does not belong to you, or at least that's how it felt to me. And I've spoken to, you know, so many women now over the years, that's a pretty common feeling. So again, just imagine. So what I say is menopausal women often don't know they're menopausal, because when it begins, the term is perimenopause, and many women don't know that's what's, because they could be having regular periods and there's some strange things happening, but no one talks about these things. And so I say at the very, very least, what you're probably seeing is a downturn in productivity. So you're almost seeing women reversing away from opportunities as opposed to, you know, running towards them, because they're saying things like, you might say, oh, Sharon, can you come and present to the senior leadership team? Might you do this? And I'm going, no, Ben, it's fine. You know, send Louise. She's much better at it. And that's because I am utterly terrified that I'm going to forget the name for, you know, I'm waving a pen at you. It's a thingy. It's a thangy. I've put my keys in the kettle. I can't remember my own name. I can't get the words out. So women are terrified that they're going to mess it up. So they're kind of making excuses why they won't join in. But at the very, very worst, what you're saying is the talent is leaving. So the talent, and I would say this isn't empirical research, but again, I've met enough women, you know, thousands of women now over the last 4 years who would say things like, especially if they've worked in their positions for 6 months or more, because after that, you've usually passed the probation after 12 months. So after 12 months, you're normally into a flow, into a stride, you know what you're good at, you know what your capabilities are. And when menopause begins for lots of women, it's often not bad enough. The symptoms, again, you're probably not associating this with this menopause thing. Like I say, it's often like feeling more anxious, maybe not sleeping very well. Again, memory feels like not yourself. So women are putting two and two together and coming up with what I say is 46. And you'll hear them saying things like we mentioned earlier, I've lost my confidence. And what they're mostly deciding to do, because most people are fair and reasonable, I think, and they think, well, I used to be able to do that for that fair day's work, for that fair day's pay. I can't do that anymore. So it's probably because I'm getting older. We often make that, you know, correlation. And they leave. So it's usually not ever picked up in things like exit interviews, even if those things exist, because no one's going to be asking the question about menopause because it just isn't there. And it hasn't been there until fairly recently. So you're not going to pick it up there. And I always remember when I set out, I had a conversation with, it was a senior woman in a business. And she said, well, she said, Sharon, we don't have these problems here. I went, really? She went, yes, no one's ever come to me and said, menopause is a problem. I said, all I'm going to say to you, remember this is about 4 years ago now, I said, all I'm going to say to you is, I imagine that in your recording processes, if you've got, you know, an HR process where you record things like that, I imagine menopause isn't even listed as a thing. She was like, I'm sure it will be. And I said, I'm going to bet 1 million Geordie pounds just for fun that I imagine that it isn't. And guess what? Who was right? Just saying. It didn't exist.
And then you bought your super yacht and sailed off into the distance.
I did. If only. But that's the thing. It's like it just hasn't been anywhere. So for me, menopause has been hiding in plain sight for all of these years. It's moving inside at the same time. I was running sessions last year, and I can't remember if I mentioned this to you, but I was running some sessions, and there were three different sessions, three different organisations. And there must have been, I felt like there was something in the air because all I can see, especially when it's virtual, is tiles of faces. And so this woman burst into tears. And me, my immediate thought was, oh my goodness, Sharon, what have you done now to upset someone? Have you said something? And so it turned out that when we explored, so it was because it was out of utter relief, Ben. That's why she was crying. She was a senior woman in her business, and she felt for the very first time this was a safe place to share her own story, and just the relief of having bottled all this stuff up, trying to hide it. So I'm saying to women, with this statistic of 100%, must come power and strength, not weakness. Yeah. Everyone will encounter this. So we've got to just clear the decks. But it makes me so sad. And that happened twice more with two other women in two different organisations. Like I say, I felt like there was something in the air, crying out of utter relief.
So that's a nice lead-in. So what response are you getting from men and women when you go in and run your sessions within companies and corporates? And what impact is it having if you're able to tell and know?
Well, yeah, so what's really fascinating is, and I think organisations get really hung up, like, Sharon, where do we start? And I say, you've just got to start somewhere. And I always say, start small, you know, and start building the momentum. And what you'll tend to find ordinarily in the first instance when you're introducing menopause into the workplace is it will be the women in your organisation who will step forward first, especially if it's elective. So unless you're being mandatory, it's going to be the women because we're kind of desperate because we don't know where to get this information because it doesn't really and hasn't really readily existed. So you tend to see those women, you know, whether in the content that I use now, it's the same. It's the same, you know, whether you're a leader or a non-leader, all the content is the same because I want people to behave like adults. So I don't want any secrecy between these people know this and these people don't know this. Yeah. So you'll tend to find, in the main, it's women stepping forward first. But what's really, really powerful about that is I say it all the time. By the end of the session, the women are kind of looking around and going, well, where's the men? Why aren't there any men here? We think everybody needs to learn about this. In fact, where are all the leaders? In fact, we want all the leaders to learn about this stuff. So it was really fascinating. I was doing this really large piece of work a couple of years ago, just before the pandemic hit. And then subsequently did stuff online. It was all face-to-face and it went online. And the first year was elective. Come if you want to come. And this particular organisation ran a suite of sessions for their managers and a suite of sessions for non-managers, which was subscribed mostly by women. There were some men coming along, but the men were mostly coming as leaders. But it was elective, remember, so not really many men coming along and not all leaders. And so what was really fascinating was the non-managers who came along, I asked them for feedback, and it was really fascinating. So if my line manager had gone along to a session and I'd gone along, I was really happy. because I felt like I could probably have an open, honest conversation because we had the same information provided to us. Whereas if you'd gone along, but your line manager chose not to, you were really quite grumpy about that and you felt at a disadvantage. So because of that feedback, yeah, two was all leaders, all managers at this level and above must attend.
And what was the response? Did you get a lot of, let's say, reluctant delegates from the male contingent?
Yes, I did. So it was really fascinating. There was a suite of 10 sessions booked, for example, at a time. And what was really interesting is, and the person I was dealing with, I rang Liz. I went, Liz, I said, I know you've got lots of men, male managers in the organisation, but none of them are booking on yet. And I said, I think I know what's happening here. I think they're hoping that I'm going to go away, that this is going to be, cancelled. And so if they hang on long enough, they'll get out of it. And so that's exactly what happened. They hung on and hung on till the last two sessions, Ben, were all men, practically all right. Men. And what was really, really powerful was, and they didn't have to say this, a couple of the men on each session kind of stepped forward and said, do you know what? We didn't want to come. And I said, well, I could probably guess that. They've all said it was the best thing that they had ever done for a couple of reasons. A, because they would never have chosen to do it left to their own devices. They wouldn't have heard this from anybody at all. But they could see the real power of understanding, not necessarily from even a workplace point of view, but because of their families and their friends. And so that's what I'm saying. Menopause, it can't harm you, but it can certainly help you. But because of this, of the statistic of 100%, we women are insidious. We're everywhere, right? There's no escape. There's literally no escape. So everyone, I say, will be impacted by menopause at some point, whether it's me, as a female, that it'll happen to me in my body, or whether it's you in my orbit, whoever you are, you would, be impacted. So, for example, I always get fascinated when sometimes organisations will say, make my toes curl, Sharon, can you work with our women of a certain age? And I'm like, no, because do you know what it even means? Because the real shocking statistic is there's up to 1 in 100 women, statistically, will go through what's classed as early menopause.
Right.
And early menopause is under the age of 45, often under the age of 40. So we've got to get away. So technically, menopause could happen to anybody at any time. So the power of learning about menopause, whoever you are in your organisation, can only be hugely beneficial. And like I said earlier, when you've got men saying, this potentially could save my marriage, I work with a lot of manufacturing organisations where you might think, well, why would they want to talk about menopause when it's maybe an 80-20 split in favour of male versus female? That's because I would say, currently, most people identify still as male and female, and you would say the majority would still probably identify as heterosexual. So the chances are your workforce is going to be living and loving in very close quarters with, wives, girlfriends, partners. And again, what might the impact be of their home life and the impact of menopause at home? And like you say, the sleep deprivation, the arguments it might cause, the mood swings that your other half might be having, all of these things add up and then can be impacted, by the workplace through, like I say, a downturn in productivity, sickness, divorce. I've had some horrible stories, shared to me about individuals where their marriages have broken down because neither party understood it was menopause related. And I'm just not having that anymore. It's outrageous.
Yeah, I just think this is such a interesting conversation and topic. That's actually just so important. There's kind of loads like firing off in my brain right now. Like listeners of the show will have heard me say this for a long time, but I always say that the job of a leader is to deliver the results that we're responsible for, mm-hmm. and to look after the people we've got the privilege and responsibility to lead.
Sure.
Based on the fact that everyone we lead is the most important person in someone else's life, right? Mm-hmm. Kind of everyone we lead is someone's husband, wife, mum, dad, brother, sister, son, yep. daughter, yada, yada, yada. And how we behave as leaders, how we respond to those that we lead, doesn't just impact that person whilst they're at work. It has an impact on what they're like at home.
Yeah.
But equally, that old adage of, oh, come to work, you put your professional suit and your mask on and you park all the, you leave all the home challenges at home.
Yeah.
It's just bonkers. Like, that's just not how human beings work. If you are
not at all
looking after a parent who has dementia, you can't just park that when you go to work.
No.
If you are going through menopause, you can't just park that at work.
No.
So for leaders to understand what's going on in the lives of those that we lead and all the things that could be going on is so important. And as much as I think I'm fairly open-minded and try and think about these things, there's a session I often run with leaders on leadership programs where I talk about team dynamics and draw an iceberg on a flip chart, and you've got above the line all the things that show you how a team is performing, how they're getting on, even how an individual is performing. And then below the line, you've got a whole load more, right? The old adage of an iceberg, two-thirds is hidden. All the stuff that sits below it, kind of history, politics, values and beliefs, kind of religion, prior relationships, home life. On that flip chart, below the line, I've never written menopause.
Why would you? You wouldn't ever have thought
no,
that.
But equally, no one in a group has ever said menopause, Ben, because it's not something we talk about, but absolutely could be going on. And again, as you were talking, I've gone back to a session I ran years ago for a client, and I won't say who it was, but they was really under pressure publicly.
Yeah.
And it was like a joint venture that chief exec asked me to come in and facilitate what he called the come to Jesus meeting.
Ooh.
So I knew it was going to be tough from how he described it. And I knew they was really under pressure. And we turned up at this hotel, a lady probably in her mid to late 40s kind of walked in. She was the first one there.
Mm.
I was chatting to her. She asked me like two questions about how the session was going to run and then burst into tears and walked out.
Okay.
Now, might have been menopause, could have been 50 other things going on.
Yeah.
And then the same thing happened during the session when it got particularly sort of tense and they was getting to the nub of the issue. Again, she got really upset and walked out. And I think she was the only woman in a group of eight. Mm. And the guys all rolled their eyes slightly and looked a little bit awkward and embarrassed. And again, perhaps a little bit of understanding of what could have been going on.
Well,
that could have played out quite differently.
And that's why we need senior leaders, especially, to role model and come along to things like the sessions that I run. I'm not saying my sessions. I'm saying you have to face up to this because it's a life event that is going to impact you, whoever you are, whether you like it or not. There won't be any escape. You will know somebody somewhere, whether that's at work, at home, a friend or family member, who will be going and go through menopause. So, you know, learning about this, as I keep saying, it cannot harm you. It can only help you and it can give you a different perspective. I was running a session there this morning and it was 50-50 male, female in the room. That's how the client wanted it to be, which I was delighted about because I love speaking to men about the menopause. I really do. And again, one of the guys came over to me and said, you know, he said, I was a bit apprehensive. I didn't know how it would be. He said, but it's been really, really engaging. I've absolutely learned loads and it's made tons of pennies drop in my head. And I was running a session for, I won't say who, but again, a huge employer. And again, the audience was mostly men. This was an online session. So I don't really know who people are. I just see faces. They don't have titles. They just have names.
Yeah.
So there was a particular guy and he was asking loads of pertinent questions. And I always say there's no such thing as a daft question. There might be a daft answer, of course, but there won't be a daft question. Great questions. And then I got this fabulous email and it turned out he was the top guy. And again, he kind of thought he was, so he's been a great leader. He was role modeling. He was leading the way. He was turning up. But he said, I did think, two-hour session, what on earth do I want to do that for? I've got much better things to be doing. But he went and he said, honestly, Sharon, he said, it's totally transformed the way that I'm thinking. And he said, the organisation is much more male-dominated than female, but we want to be more diverse, as you'll hear lots of employers talking about these days. He said, but more importantly than that, he said, I've got a wife and two daughters. He went, I'd never thought about this stuff. He said, why? And I said, well, why would you? You know, it's not something to beat yourself up about. But he can see now the value of something that he was thinking, have I really got to do that? Should I do that? And the value that he got from it was just enormous. So that's the reason, even if you thought, well, from a workplace point of view, I'm not too bothered. But like I say, each and every human that you're going to encounter, each and every woman who's going to bring their story has a unique story. And like I said earlier, I believe leaders aren't paid to have all the answers, but you are paid to listen. You are paid to listen to the human in front of you, hear them, really listen, and transact between you in an adult way. And the message that I always provide to organisations is, if I disclose my menopause to you and you're my line manager, what I hope is that we've got a safe enough relationship, psychological safety, where I can share and be myself and share without judgment. You listen and you may decide that there are some small, reasonable adjustments. Now, I'm a bit controversial when I talk about menopause because I think certainly the larger organisations maybe are getting worried because they're hearing things like, you must have a menopause policy. And I'm saying, okay, yes, you can do that. But what if you didn't? What if you didn't have a specific policy? Because my belief is if we start going down this, every new thing needs a thing, then what about the diabetes at work policy? Somebody might rock up and say, well, where's that? Where's the cancer at work policy? We keep hearing this horrible statistic that either you or I are going to get cancer in our lifetime.
Yeah, one in two now.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I'm like, I hope it's neither of us. But that's the statistic.
So, I thought you were going to say, I hope it's you, Ben.
No, I hope it's neither of us. So my point is, would you have a cancer at work policy? No, you wouldn't go down those specific routes. So I'm saying organisations, just stop a minute and don't be frightened and worried because it sounds like a scary thing. What I say is menopause to me is not more important than any other of the initiatives you've got going on for your people, but the scale is greater. That's what's different. Yeah. The scale, it's deeper, it's broader in that respect. So what I'm saying is you and your organisations will have beautiful policies and procedures for things like disclosure of pregnancy. So if I was to disclose a pregnancy, I'm sure beautiful things would happen. I might get a car parking space near the office if I'm on site. I might get a workstation assessment. And I might get a desk fan. I might get time off for appointments. All of those things can be appended to the subject matter once you've understood it. So what I say to clients is, understand the subject matter, then can you now go back to your current processes and policies and look at them now but through a menopause lens?
Yeah, brilliant, brilliant. And it's interesting as well, like we spoke about this off air a few weeks ago. Mm. So I've introduced you to a client of mine who's starting to think about this as part of their just employee wellbeing program. And it's really interesting. I got into the conversation with them about it. I suddenly thought, actually, there's a whole other host of, I guess, let's call them life events that are probably going to happen to many, many people in an organization throughout their lifespan or their working career that's going to have an impact on them. And you're spot on what you said. I love the fact that you said we don't need a policy for all of those and they're not going to happen to everybody, but just as a leader, as a manager, as a business, knowing these are some things that are going to happen to a high percentage of people working for us. It could be like, what's it like to be a graduate joining a new business? Mm. I spoke to one guy years ago when I worked at Tesco, and it was his second rotation as a grad. He said, do you know, Ben, when I started, I sat at my desk in pain for 3 hours. I'm like, what do you mean? He said, well, I didn't know what the etiquette was for going to the toilet.
Oh.
So I sat there holding it in because I thought I couldn't go until it was lunchtime.
Right.
Like still at uni or school.
Yeah, yeah.
So there's graduates, there's menopause, there's returning to work after maternity or paternity leave. Yeah. There's, you mentioned, bereavement, there's looking after aging parents who might be unwell. There's a whole host of things that are going to impact our performance at work.
Absolutely.
And to your point, it's a leader's job to listen. Mm. It's also, I think, a leader's job to create the conditions to enable people to perform, right?
Yeah.
And understanding the things at work and at home that might get in the way.
Well, the other message I give as well is I always say, so, you know, I share my story with you because you're my line manager. I always say from a line manager point of view, and the non-managers who come along to my sessions, as a non-manager, I expect to be asked this question. And as a leader, you need to be brave enough to ask the question. And the question would always be, but hey, Sharon, What do you plan to do about that? Because I always say, without both parties playing an equal active partnership, it's never going to work. And I always say, my line manager and my organisation surely should not care more about my health and well-being than me. So if I'm not going to join in, it's never going to work.
Totally.
It's never going to work.
Totally.
So it's not a one-way, you know, it's not one-way traffic. It's about adults behaving like adults, you know, really listening to each other, really showing some element of compassion and understanding. But you got, you know, but by asking pertinent questions like, come on, Sharon, what are you doing? So if, so for example, there are some quite common triggers, food and drink triggers, like caffeine, for example, can set off a number of symptoms. So if somebody keeps a food and drink diary, then you would be able to see what the impact might be and maybe change your behaviour. So for example, if I'm sitting with my head in a vat of coffee every 5 minutes, but I'm saying to you, hey, Ben, have, you know, he's saying, Sharon, have you got that deadline? Oh, no, I'm feeling terrible. Then you have every right, surely, to say, come on, Sharon, what do you plan to do about that? Because maybe I've disclosed that I think drinking coffee has a bad effect, but I'm still not doing anything about it. So I'm like, come on.
Sharon, let's finish, if we can, with some of my sort of standard quickfire questions, which aren't necessarily related to the menopause, but your answers, of course, might be. So first one is, what's the one book that you'd say has had the greatest impact upon you?
Oh, well, I was saying that I was a real reflective question for me. So I say 1984 by George Orwell, because how on earth was that man so clever to predict kind of the future that we're living, that I feel like I'm living in. I feel like I'm living in 1984, even though it's, you know, 2022. So yeah, I thought it was a great question. Cool. So yeah, 1984.
And one item or piece of kit that you would struggle to live without, or to put it another way, as a previous guest did, like an item or piece of kit that if you lost or it was broken, you'd immediately replace.
It's really sad, but it would be my iPhone. It's really sad. It's like, it's got everything that a girl could want.
It's the modern day Swiss Army knife though, isn't it?
It is. It absolutely is. So just one of those. Cool.
And then maybe linking what you do now with what you was doing or what you were doing 4 or 5 years ago, one piece of advice for somebody stepping into their first senior leadership role, MD or CEO position?
I would say figure yourself out and decide who you are and what you love and what you're passionate about, and find a place in the world where you can be that best person.
Amazing. What a brilliant place to end our conversation. Sharon, thank you so much. As I said at the start, probably because of the topic, I was slightly apprehensive going into this conversation because, as I say, I had next to zero knowledge about it. But you've just been so insightful. Most of all, I think your like easygoing kind of nature and how you talk about this topic is just so powerful in helping people, I guess, connect with it, relate to it, and putting people at ease for what for some people might be a bit of a awkward subject to talk about. So thank you so much, and keep doing the great work that you're doing, because I can imagine just from talking to you today that it's having a huge impact. So thank you.
Thank you so much.
There you have it, folks. My conversation with Sharon MacArthur. I hope you found that as interesting as I did, and I also hope that perhaps it fills some knowledge gaps that you may or may not have known that you had. That was certainly the case for me. Maybe as well, it might help surface some unconscious bias that exists within you or your leadership team. And the more I think about it, the more I think it's just a topic or another topic for us as leaders to have some awareness around, which in turn can only make us better leaders for our organisations and for the people that we've got the privilege and responsibility to lead. Before you go, before you sign off, can I ask a favour of you, please? Please, could you take just a few minutes to rate and review the show wherever you listen? If you're listening on Apple Podcasts, then please just scroll all the way down past all of the episodes. And at the bottom of the page, or somewhere near the bottom, you'll see the rate and review area. Please just click on the star rating. A 5-star rating would be amazing. And then take just 30 seconds to write a short review for us. It really means a lot to me, and it really does enable us to keep bringing you more and more episodes. If we don't get those reviews, we simply won't be able to carry on with the show. And that would be a crying shame. But that's it for this episode, folks. I hope it's been useful. I hope to talk to you again in the next episode very soon. Take care and lead on.